We discuss hemp production in Wisconsin on The Morning Show. I'm Kedar Shirkand. Glad you could be here. Our state transferred regulatory authority of hemp growers over to the federal government at the start of the year. Producers now operate directly under the USDA. State data show more than 5,400 acres of hemp planted in 2020. Hemp growing and processing licenses dropped off last year with a little over 1,300 applications filed with the state in 2021. Join the conversation on the future of the hemp industry here, where you see it headed, 800-642-1234. Alex Moots is a hemp farmer in Adams, about 25 miles north of Wisconsin Dells, president of Complete Agronomy Solutions. He and his business partners had 200 acres in hemp production last year, expanded that to 545 acres this year. Alex, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Good morning. And we also have Shelby Ellison with us, an assistant professor in the UW-Madison Department of Horticulture. Shelby, welcome back.
Hello, glad to be here.
Well, Shelby, let's start with you. As production of hemp now transfers authority over to the USDA for regulation, what does that change mean for the industry?
Yeah, well, we can only predict what it means because this is the first year, at least in Wisconsin, that this is happening. But as far as I can tell, things really are going to be quite aligned between the former Wisconsin program and the USDA federal program, mostly because Wisconsin did a really good job when they initially made their state program to be well aligned with the federal program. And you know, for the growers, for the actual practices, they're going to be very similar. In the long term, it'll be interesting to see if many states move to the federal program, and that might actually ease some of the differences that currently exist between the states and hopefully make it a little bit more of a fair playing ground for everyone. Yep.
So sounds rather seamless. Wondering, Alex, from your perspective, how is this change in regulatory authority perhaps changing how you do business?
Yeah, at the field level, I don't think it changes too much. I agree with what Shelly was saying there. It really was a seamless transfer. On the selling side or the distribution side, and also like the analytics of what is being grown where, I think hopefully more states come on so we can have a little bit more of a unified approach on what's growing, whether that be hemp grain, hemp fiber, hemp biomass for, you know, cannabinoid production or what it is. And that's really been a pain point for us because it's really hard to really know how much is out there. You see kind of numbers from everyone. So I'm hoping that that improves.
Good data helps. So Alex, take us into your production. When did you start growing hemp? What is the farm like?
Yeah, so I started a company out in Colorado about 4 years ago. I was a small equity partner out there, mostly in the seed and genetics distribution side of the business. Obviously that 2018 and 17 and 19 pricing for this crop was kind of just insane. So there was a little bit of a gold rush to hemp, led to overproduction, and we had to really re-strategize on what the future of that company was going to be. I ended up leaving there and coming back here and starting a company with my partners, Bernardo and Andy Christensen. And we focused on in-field. What can we do to make this more efficient? You know, how can we mechanize this crop and do it in an efficient way to keep up with the pricing that was coming a little bit more standardized? So that's really what we focused on. And then from there, after we kind of got that all dialed in, now we're focused on the hemp grain and fiber markets. I believe that that's really the focus of this industry in the future. And got a grain cleaner up here from Kansas. And now we're looking at a decortication machine and trying to figure out how to take this a little bit further down the supply chain and see what we can do.
Yes, and we're going to talk about that element of markets, value added, all of that. I first want to reintroduce you both as we discuss the roadmap for hemp production in our state. We have Alex Moots there in Adams County, hemp grower, UW-Madison horticulturist Shelby Ellison with us. You can join in 800-642-1234. Shelby, I just want to make sure that we understand the difference. Explain the difference between hemp and marijuana.
Sure. So both belong to the plant genus species Cannabis sativa, and then it's actually a legal definition that defines them. So hemp is the cannabis sativa plant with less than 0.3% THC, so the psychoactive component that we associate with drug type cannabis or marijuana. So it's that legal definition, less than 0.3%, you're hemp, more than that, you're marijuana.
Okay, thank you for that. Let's bring in Philip now in Madison. Philip, hi, what's on your mind?
Hello.
Hi, Philip, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Hi, Shelby. Hi, Alex. It's Phil over at WEFMA. I'm just calling with you two experts being up there. Do you see more revenue potentially in the future coming to hemp farms across Wisconsin being under the USDA and opening up that grant and research money?
Philip, thank you for that. Alex, you first.
I do. You know, Philip, I know Philip very well. Nice to talk to you. I think it will. And like I pointed to earlier, it's a lot of it has, I mean, we don't even know how much is out there. You know that, Philip. I mean, it's to the point now where it's kind of a toss up on, you know, we have acres planted, but things that separated what was planted and what markets that it went into is unknown. So I think that data part of it is going to play a crucial role. And that money for infrastructure, because as of right now, I mean, there's just nobody that can decortidate and turn this fiber into a textile at the rate as the other countries that we're competing with that we're importing from. So I think that money would play a crucial role in development of those infrastructures.
Along those lines, I wonder, hemp businesses have experienced difficulty in securing loans or bank accounts when hemp was listed as a controlled substance. Are farmers able to get credit now to start hemp operations? What is the status of that, Alex?
So for us, I mean, a lot of the banks that and we work with, a really good bank in Marquesan, Ergo Bank, they've been great working with us on hemp. Now, as far as like a credit for that, there's really not that many futures contracts for this industry. So it's always been at the cost of the farm. And that's something that my company has really strived to change by bringing those costs down and making us a little bit more competitive. But we're working with a few different banks, most importantly, Ergo and Marquesan there to prove the concept out. And we're doing a breeding and genetics breeding project this year with Element 6 Dynamics, which the goal will be to produce enough genetics for the farmers here in central Wisconsin. And they're working diligently on the offtakes and see if we can come together for 2023.
Shelby, you work in that area of genetics and optimizing seeds. What is evolving for you in this type of research?
Yeah, so, you know, this year is a transitional year in the state. A lot of the work we've done early on was growing hemp for high cannabinoid production. And so we worked on doing a lot of cultivar trialing just to, you know, see what exists out there, what cultivars there are, how they yield, if they're suitable for Wisconsin environments. This year, we're going to be transitioning a lot into the fiber and grain industry and providing more data. We've been doing that all along, but we see that growers really want to know what does well here. And with those trials, we're able to gather information on, you know, what traits need to be improved, what are our major pest concerns, climate concerns, and then really, you know, taking that information, going to the USDA, other funding entities, and saying, okay, we know what the problems are. Now we need to breed new cultivars that are gonna yield well for growers in our region to be successful.
Hemp seeds used to be expensive, I think ranging from $1 to $5 per seed. Is that still true, Shelby? Is there a cost barrier?
Yeah, so I was looking for some seed the other day, and I still don't understand, but high cannabinoid seed can still be anywhere from $1 to $2 a seed.
Wow.
I don't think that many people are going to pay for that right now, but The high cannabinoid types are still pretty expensive. You can get it down maybe to 25 cents a seed or more if you just scale up, but grain and fiber is more on the, you know, per pound basis that you're paying for. So it's much more reasonable. It might be something like, I don't know, $200, $300 per 50-pound bag of seed. But okay. I'll let Alex give a better price.
Yes, Alex, what about those cost inputs?
Well, like I said, it was, I mean, at the time in 2017, 18, your pounds that you were creating out of the field were going anywhere from $40 to $60 a pound. As that has come down, which allowed people to justify the seed costs and charging $1 to $2 because the end product is worth it. But as that's come down, you've seen a lot of seed companies kind of exit. I also think that there's a lot of seed companies out here that may have reproduced seed that technically wasn't the appropriate thing to do. So there's a lot of legal stuff happening right now in the seed markets. But I have seen it come down. Where it doesn't, it is not down where it needs to be, in my opinion. I do understand that the R&D and research and time and expertise that it takes to create these awesome genetics, but at the end of the day, we can't be spending what they think we can in the field. So I've been able to connect with a few different seed partners and get down to a reasonable price, or at least get creative on structuring a joint venture where they can partake in some of the production of the raw material instead of an upfront cash deal. So you got to get creative in this industry, and until things get figured out, that's just going to be the way it is. But Shelby, I'd love to hook you up if you need any. Just let me know.
dealing here. We're looking at what the future holds for hemp production in our state with hemp farmer Alex Moots, based in Adams, about 30 miles south of Wisconsin Rapids. Shelby Ellison studies hemp seeds and plants to optimize breeding and crop production. You can join in on any aspect of the hemp industry, especially markets, value added, 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're talking about the future of hemp production in our state now that the USDA is the regulatory body for the industry here. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. After the 2014 Farm Bill, Wisconsin legalized the growth of industrial hemp in 2017, launching a pilot program late that year. And at the time, UW researchers called it an old crop in a new era because our state was one of the first to grow hemp over a century ago. Let's hear from farmers, from processors. Join in what you see from this crop, 800-642-1234. We have UW-Madison horticulturist Shelby Ellison and hemp farmer Alex Moots. Stay with us for the hour. Alex, you say that our country lacks the technology and the infrastructure that's necessary to process hemp for fiber and to produce textiles. What do you see? Where do you see the gaps? What's needed to help farmers expand into fiber?
Well, I think exactly what you talked about earlier and what Philip brought up, which was we need to invest in the industry. It's been, gosh, I don't, how long has it been? I would be guessing here, but I'm pretty sure it's over 40, 50 years of prohibition on this plant. And during that time, every other industry and commodity has had the opportunity to develop technologies to bring down costs. So when we try to enter a marketplace, whether that be the pulp industries or microfibers or anything, we're competing with the plastics, the petroleum industries that are, you know, the same type of product. So it's going to take state-funded investment. It's going to take help from my leadership and legislation to connect the dots a little bit to help correct what, I mean, our country put us in this position, right? So we've got to find a way to connect the dots. And I don't think it's going to be easy, but the biggest thing, like, for example, is just decorrugation, separating the stalky herd, the woody portion of the plant from the long fiber material. That right there is one of the biggest bottlenecks in this industry. There's companies like IND Hemp out in Montana that's got some things figured out, and there's a company in Nebraska, but all of that is self-funded or using venture capital to try to catch up. So it's a little bit of a land race right now, and there's people trying to figure it out, but the more the merrier.
It's a land race right now. Shelby, where do you see research at with especially inroads into fiber?
Yeah, I completely agree with everything Alex just said. I think, you know, there's this whole continuum from when we plant the seed in the ground to when you have a final product. And I think for something like hemp, pretty much there needs to be work done along that entire continuum from the plant genetics in the ground, making sure that you yield enough, that there's a high enough amount of material leaving the farmer's field that they can get paid enough to continue to grow that crop in the future, then to the decorticating facilities that were mentioned to separate it into the core components, and then figuring out, you know, hemp can be made into a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
What are we going to do? What are we going to focus on in Wisconsin that might be different than what they focus on? There are regions of the country that have specialized in different types of industry. So I think finding what industries are going to support Wisconsin farmers that we're going to use this feedstock material for is kind of that industry needs to grow at the same time as we grow the number of acres here. So, you know, a lot of it is those to get people to switch to trying to use hemp fiber for something that maybe corn is currently used for or cotton is currently used for. You need to have enough of that material available to guarantee that they're going to be able to, you know, use that in the either existing infrastructure or make that investment. So all these pieces have to kind of rise at the same time to make it work. But I think just figuring out what our area of expertise in Wisconsin is going to be. And one good thing is that we have a lot of good farmers. So if we can grow good crops that are high yielding here. So that part is well on its way.
Well, there's been struggles in recent years with high seedling mortality rate posing serious financial risks to farmers. Are these plants hardy enough, Shelby? What's going on there?
I definitely think hemp as a whole is hardy enough that it can withstand, you know, cold falls in Wisconsin. I think the bigger issue with our climate is how wet it is and kind of how variable the rain pattern is. So hemp is grown all over the world. There's hemp cultivars that come from really high latitudes and more, temperate locations. So we have germplasm or plant material we can pull from that will do well. So that's kind of what we've been working on is figuring what grows well here. But now it's with really intense thunderstorms that come through, making sure that the plants don't lodge, making sure that the plants don't mold at the end of the season if we get a bunch of rain in September. So it's a lot of those kind of pest resistance problems that we're dealing with at harvest time and making sure that we have resistant varieties that we can still harvest flower, grain, or fiber off of.
Talking with UW-Madison horticulturist Shelby Ellison, Alex Moots here, a grower in Adams County, a consultant looking at the hemp industry and the new oversights coming down from the USDA, what that means. You can join in on hemp production and the industry as you see it, 800-642-1234. Alex, let's talk about risk. What do you see to crop productivity and yields and kind of how temperamental this type of crop is?
Yes, it's temperamental, but it's also pretty resilient. I mean, we obviously don't use any pesticides, herbicides. There's no labels for this to be able to use at a commercial level. So it's all organically grown now. It doesn't necessarily mean on organic land, but the organic practices that we use, I mean, you would think that there would be a lot of pressure and a lot of problems in the field, but we really haven't experienced them.
How do you manage weeds?
All cultivation. Yeah, I mean, it's all cultivated. We try to get the canopy up and out, creating a shade barrier for the weeds as soon as possible. And that was one of the first things that we figured out early on in the industry. A lot of these seed brokers that were coming over from the marijuana markets, which were, you know, consulting people on using 1,500 to 2,500 seeds per acre. That was a mistake because of the weeding issue. And then they had to have hand labor in the field weeding. So, if you can get this plant up and out and canopied, they kind of take care of themselves as far as the weed problems is concerned.
I would think that growing organic hemp, there would be some market for that, that that would be also very valuable.
Yeah, there hasn't been too much of a price difference, in my opinion, on organically grown versus non-organic. If it's stamped by the USDA that it has been organically certified, there is a premium. But for the land costs and other things that are associated with that process, I have never taken my company that way. We grow it organically on conventional ground. We do soil testing and tissue sampling to make sure that obviously there's no residues or anything in the final product. But yeah, that's what we've used.
Alex Moots runs an ag consulting firm, grows industrial hemp in Adams County. Shelby Ellison, assistant professor focused on the hemp plant, optimizing seeds at UW-Madison. Be part of this, 800-642-1234. We'll pick it up after a news update on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thank you to all who donated during our spring member drive. Support from people like Charles in Wisconsin Dells helps ensure you and our whole community have access to trustworthy news, statewide conversations, and quality entertainment. And if you miss the drive, your gift now, super important. Listeners like you play a vital role in keeping Wisconsin informed and connected. Thank you for supporting WPR's essential service with your donation at WPR.org. Now we're discussing the future of the hemp industry in Wisconsin as the USDA is now the regulatory authority for producers. Wisconsin's Legislative Reference Bureau, they put out a report several years ago on regulating the hemp industry. And the Bureau, they talked about the lineage originating in China thousands of years ago, calling it a highly versatile crop harvested to produce over 25,000 products today. Join in on the hemp industry's challenges or breakthroughs as you see it. 800-642-1234. Alex Moots is a grower and a consultant in Adams. And Shelby Ellison is a hemp researcher and assistant professor of horticulture at UW-Madison. They're with us for the hour. Let's bring in Bob now in Wisconsin Dells. Hi, Bob. What would you like to bring up?
Hey, good morning. So just a kind of an observation. You guys have been talking a lot about genetics and a lot about the hardiness of the plant and also the organic nature of growing it, all of which I kind of have to chuckle at a little bit because I'm a little maybe older than you folks. But, all through my life, I've seen the vestiges of our ancient and revered hemp crop in Wisconsin growing in ditches all over the place. So I would say, just as a simple maybe first take at getting some hardy genetics, is just go out and start picking those plants because they've been growing in the ditches as vestiges of the crop that grew here 70 years ago, and they're still doing just fine. I mean, they're 30 feet high.
Bob, and, thank you for that observation. Shelby, you first. Hemp growing in the ditches.
Yeah, I mean, I could not agree more. It is the number one thing I'm passionate about in my research is preserving those feral genetics. So I'm also from Wisconsin and saw lots of that ditch weed growing up. And I knew that even as I transitioned into this job that existed, and that was a super, super valuable resource for us. So I've been actively collecting feral hemp. That's what you say in academia now, is feral hemp instead of ditch weed.
Gotcha. We're following.
Yes. So
kind of like feral pigs.
Yes, exactly. And we've expanded that beyond Wisconsin. There's a lot of that throughout the Midwest, and it's very valuable to collect that material. And I'm actually collecting that and putting that in the new USDA hemp seed bank, which will be available for people to take and start breeding programs with that. So we have more adapted material, but that's very true.
Alex, what's your take on ditchweed hemp, on feral hemp?
I think it's great. I mean, there's a reason why Wisconsin was one of the largest producers during Hemp for Freedom. I mean, it's going to be everywhere. And that, I think what I could say is that the genetics that you're going to find in the feral hemp are not probably going to be producing the cannabinoids that you're looking for if you're growing for cannabinoids. But as far as the grain and fiber are concerned, I think it's awesome. I mean, it's great. But as far as you actually creating CBD products or a biomass material in the flower with a high potency rate of CBD and other cannabinoids, which is 140 of them, I would probably have to say that those probably aren't producing that.
Bob,
because they're just genetically produced to create those cannabinoids, you know. So it's been a lot of stuff there.
We've been kind of moving around this question, but can you save hemp seeds and plant them the following year? Or are there some strict regulations around the seeds themselves, Alex?
I haven't come across any. We've replanted seed from the previous year before, and we plan on doing that this year. We're looking to get our seed certification for our hemp grain cleaner, and we're going to store what we're doing for the grain project and hopefully distribute those across the central sands here is what our goal is.
What about crop rotation and the impact on the land? You know, we've been looking at the climate crisis, the downpours of rain. Can you grow it year after year, or what about a rotation?
We're collecting all that data now. We've got some from, you know, after corn, after beans, and after potatoes. So we're collecting all of that and trying to analyze it and figure out what the best path forward is. Right now, we're in the stage of we need to see what it does to crops following crops and then crops afterwards. So we're collecting all of that right now.
Shelby, do you have any research data there on crop rotation and hemp?
Yeah, so similarly, a couple of those, we've been involved with a couple of those similar studies, but you know, it takes a couple of years to generate that, and we've really only been doing it for about 3 years now. But I would say, and just general advice, is that rotations are important, and similar with hemp. Hemp has pests. There are insects and bacterial and fungal pests that if you plant it in the same year, they're probably going to, you know, be in the border weeds, be living in the soil, so you're more likely to have more of that inoculum or pest pressure the next year. So rotations are always wise, but figuring out the complementary things to rotate with that don't share those same pests are really important to get a clean start every year.
And I should have mentioned, we're right about the time of spring planting for hemp seeds, Alex, getting underway in Wisconsin. How are you preparing at this point to plant?
Well, right now, praying for the rain to stop, but
okay.
besides that, we've got some time. We'll be, like, by June 7th, we should have everything in the ground. We're a little bit after corn and beans, so right now we're concentrating on the corn acres, get those in the ground, and then we'll transition to hemp, so.
Okay, so a few weeks out. We have hemp grower Alex Mutz with us in Adams County, UW-Madison horticulturist Shelby Ellison, as we get a read on hemp production in our state and the way forward for the hemp industry in Wisconsin. Sharing your experiences as well, your questions, 800-642-1234. Becky is with us in Houstonsford. Becky, hi, go ahead.
Oh, hello there. Thank you for taking my call, and thank you for your wonderful gifts. The question I had, are the hemp growers or the people who are working with hemp research at UW-Madison, have you been trying to reach out or say cross-connect or collaborate with any of Wisconsin's existing paper sciences and paper mill production facilities? I know that paper, which is some of the papers that are sold, say, for art purposes, but also for printers and writing paper and all sorts of different purposes, are value added when you try to buy them. They tend to go at a higher price point if they're a mix of the tree fiber and a hemp fiber when I've looked at purchasing them. So have our hemp growers look to, you know, perhaps collaborate with some of our existing paper mills, or that, because our paper industry is starting to struggle, to maybe look at producing products that can compete on the international or the national market because they're a value-added product.
Becky, thank you for that. Shelby, collaboration with our local Wisconsin paper industry on R&D, what do you see there?
Yeah, it's a great point, and So initially when we started our program there, I connected with some folks up at UWSB in the paper industry or in the paper science department, and we've talked about some potential collaborations. We also, there's the U.S. Forest Products Lab down in Madison here, and I've went and toured kind of their facility to see if there's anything we could look at with integrating hemp into some products and testing it in terms of how it competes or can be utilized in existing infrastructure. All of this kind of leads to this problem of scale again. A lot of our paper industry has operated on a very large scale, and what I have, you know, is half an acre of hemp fiber to offer them. So it's kind of this chicken or the egg thing where it's like, well, is this going to work? But we need to have a lot of acreage to be able to feed into some of these paper mills to get them excited and thinking about the potential of operating in integrating hemp into their paper lines. So I think that there are some people, some companies that are interested. I think it's going to take, you know, people like Alex are growing hundreds of acres that could maybe provide that material to explore that. At the very base level, I work here. I've collaborated with some a paper specialist at UW-Madison, and we actually had a paper-making workshop where we took hemp from my research trials, and we decorticated it and made pulled sheets of paper just to kind of understand the process and what are some of the kinks in thinking about the scalability of that. But I sure hope that's one place that we can explore in Wisconsin.
Alex, jump in here. What's on your mind on this?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I hope that I don't want to speak too soon, but hopefully by the end of this year, there'll be an announcement from a large paper company that's looking to take it on that are having current supply issues. They're a big book printing company, and they're looking to replace some of the traditional paper stock that they order. So, I mean, again, though, it comes down to like what Shelby just said, how do we get it out of the field and into a piece of paper, you mm-hmm. know, and how can we make sure that there's enough supply for one of these large paper companies to reconfigure machinery, all of that, and techniques to produce the paper that we're going to have. So it's going to take thousands and thousands and thousands of acres to do that. Right now, we're at the stage where we're breeding the genetic to hopefully be able to do something like that. And our first goal is to get into the micronized fiber market. And that's really the easiest and first step that we can do. And that's replacement for fiberglass and car moldings and also pulp for paper. So there's tons of industries. I think that it's also going to take, and I think I like what I've seen as far as the incentives for companies to turn to a product, a raw material like hemp. And I think we need to see more of that for sure. Carbon sequestration, having that come down to incentivize the farmer to grow and then monetizing that is something that I'm really interested in. And I think we'll start to get rolling out here. But like Shelby said, it's chicken or the egg. And, you know, there's going to need to be a large investment into infrastructure in order to get us to that level.
Alex Mutz there is a hemp grower and consultant in Adams, which is midway between Wisconsin Dells, Wisconsin Rapids there. Shelby Ellison studies the best production practices for Wisconsin's hemp producers, looking at the value-added side as well, based in the UW-Madison Horticulture Department. Still time to talk about the future of the hemp industry, 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up in a minute on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation as we look at the industrial hemp industry in our state. Seeds about to go in the ground in coming weeks. As of this year, producers now operate under the regulatory authority of the USDA, not the state of Wisconsin. Our state reported that roughly 1,300 growers and producers submitted applications to the state last year, down from 2,300 in 2020. Still time for you, 800-642-1234. We have UW-Madison horticulturist and hemp plant researcher Shelby Ellison and hemp grower and consultant Alex Mutz, who stay with us for about 9 more minutes. Let's bring in Charlie now in Beaver Dam. Hi, Charlie. Go ahead with your question.
Hi, I was wondering if you consulted older farmers that used to grow hemp yesteryear. I mean, I understand, but they, I'm sure, did crop rotation and so on and so forth. I didn't hear anyone talk about that at all.
Charlie, thank you. So if I understand this correctly, talking with the older generation of hemp farmers and what the newer generation or perhaps the younger people bring into this. Alex, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, we're always looking for advice and help. I mean, like I said before, it's going to take an army of people to figure all of this out. But as far as coming across someone that is still out in the field and working on hemp that has experience in it from, you know, 40, 50 years ago plus, I haven't come across too many of them, that's for sure. But second generation, as a friend of mine, Tom, out in Montana, him and his dad used to grow hemp. He's no longer with us, but you know, so we consult with people from all over the country, trying to understand what's working, what's not working. There's little groups that are being created on social networks that are pulling resources together to try to figure all this out. So yeah, always welcome. So feel free to hit up the website if you've got a referral or someone you'd like us to speak to. We'd love to.
Charlie, do you have anyone in mind who's been growing hemp for a long time?
No, I do not. I was just wondering if they...
Oh, we have a really bad connection, Charlie. But thank you so much for calling in with that question. Barbara now in... Barbara, go ahead. Can you hear us?
Hi, yes, I can hear you.
Good, good. Go ahead.
Well, I grew hemp as part of a research program with the University of Illinois for two seasons. Well, for one season, I grew it on my own, just... I grew one variety, but then the second season I grew through this research program with the University of Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew five varieties, and then they tested it regularly to see what the cannabinoid content was of the different varieties. But the main thing I had was that as a small farmer, not growing hundreds of acres, but just growing small amounts, there's no real processing setup. You have to have like 100 pounds or, you know, 1,000 pounds or whatever of flowers for processing. So that part is really difficult. Maybe some cooperatives could come forward and set up facilities, or there's like maybe on trailers that they would take the equipment to the farm for processing. That would be one thing that would be helpful. We need to grow the seeds as well, because seeds are really beneficial for health, because you talk about omega-3s and 6s all the time, and you don't want too much of this or too much of that, and ways of getting your omega-3s and 6s, and hemp seeds has the perfect balance for the human body of omega-3 and 6s. So I think that's something that people should know, and there's a big market. I mean, right now, the oil that I get, I have a little organic food store, and I sell hemp oil, but I get it from Kentucky. I mean, why can't I should be able to get it from Wisconsin?
Barbara, you bring up so many interesting points. Shelby, you first on test plots and just the scale here. You know, Barbara doing a small amount of these research program plots, but really seeing mobile processing might be an answer.
Yeah, I agree, and I think there is that strategy for small growers, what is going to be successful for them. And I think the co-op model is a very good one to look into, where, you know, through a collective, you're able to get to the scale that you need to be able to have someone process the material from you. I think the mobile processing is also very interesting. I know there was a little bit of that for when people were growing for flower processing, just bringing, there were mobile drying units, mobile bucking units, but for the hemp decortication, I know there are several mobile decorticators available that could go from field to field, which will at least do the first step of processing, so then you can reduce some of the waste and transportation costs. So I think a lot of that, you know, it involves a lot of creativity, but I think that it'll be really important for people who are really interested in growing on a smaller scale, but growing a very high quality product or an organic product, that hopefully there'll be an additional incentive to grow that and get additional funding, that those growers will still be able to be successful.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Alex, what about you on processing on hemp oil? What do you hear there?
Processing on hemp oil from the flower you're talking about, right? Am I correct, Barbara? Yeah, okay. So yes, she's absolutely right. A lot of these extractors have set up, and I don't know if you've been to one of these, but using closed loop ethanol systems, I mean, every batch that you put into that system, after that batch is done, the entire system needs to be cleaned out, reset, reconfigured for the new raw material. So a lot of larger extractors don't like doing, you know, a 20-pound run, because it's a really not non-cost-effective way to run their machine. But I have seen small organic hemp farmers do really great, and usually that's because they're, you know, either cold pressing it themselves, or they're paying to have the extraction done, and then they're creating a retail line to sell. So, I mean, I think that there's plenty of opportunity there. But as far as a small farmer going at it himself, but really what you're facing is the same thing we're facing. I mean, there was a gluttony of hemp grown in 2019 and 2020, causing oversaturation on the market. So market pricing went down to a level where, if you're not growing this commercially and efficiently and trying to sell into the raw materials market, you're going to be overpriced, to be frank. But like I said, cooperatives grouping up together, I think that's an awesome idea. I'd love to lend a hand any way I can and try to get you to oil if you're not there already. So just let me know how I can help.
We did see this big drop-off in producers and processors seeking applications last year. Will that contribute to lessening this glut, easing that pressure?
Absolutely. We're seeing, I've got a few contacts out on the West Coast, and Oregon, Colorado are very large producers. And I haven't seen hemp biomass lot from 2021 still on the market. So they're going back into 2020s and the 2019s now. So I am seeing it drying up, and prices are coming up a little bit, but nowhere where they were in like the 2018s, 2017s or before. So it's still going to be pretty competitive, just like anything that you're trying to grow at scale. Large farming comes in, and we can be a little bit more efficient on that, but that doesn't mean that you can't grow a higher quality product and create a product that consumers would love to buy at the retail level, because the retail selling has not decreased. I mean, those prices have stayed consistent for the last 3 to 5 years. It's been the raw material providers that have been kind of squished down because of the oversupply. So sorry for going on too long there. But
no, but thank you for taking us through that journey and that supply process, and for being here. Shelby and Alex, thank you.
Absolutely.
Very welcome.
Shelby Ellison, a UW-Madison horticulturist. Alex Mutz is a hemp grower, president of Complete Agronomy Solutions in Adams County. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.